Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. We're into the third hour of the show, and we appreciate all your texts and comments coming into us, and we'll read them as the morning progresses. Good morning, Greg. In relation to vehicles on our roads without insurance, that means that they have no vehicle road tax either, so you need to have your insurance up to date to tax your car. Thanks. That comes in from Charlie. Charlie, there are ways around that, because there are people who have cars that are NCT'd and taxed, but they aren't insured. But you're still legal to drive them under certain policies. It's actually quite complicated. Let us focus now on our Wellness Wednesday. We welcome into studio Dr. Caroline Burrow, clinical psychologist at Northern Meadow Therapy. Thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me here.
And you're going to have to put a pair of headphones on, because also with us is Breege Ward, coordinator of Dunfanaghy Resource Centre. Good morning to you, Breege. It's good to have you with us. How are you keeping?
Not so bad at all. Yourself?
I am doing fine. Just trying to keep these balls in the air of one on Zoom, me here and Caroline there. But sure, listen, we'll fly through it. Okay. Shall we talk about a number of services that are going together to run a day for parents called the Gift of Resilience? Do you want to start us off on this, Breege?
Yeah, well, it looks like now we're going to have to postpone this event due to the weather. The
But we can talk about it nonetheless, and then we'll flag the new date. But go ahead.
Yeah. So the Gift of Resilience is a conference for parents that's going to be at the Waterfront Hotel in Dunloe. It was due to take place on Friday the 10th, this Friday coming. But it looks like we'll have to reschedule that now for the 21st of April. So it's an acknowledgement, really, that life can be difficult, you know, and parents need time to refill their cup. But it's looking at resilience and the importance of resilience in children. And Caroline will talk about that, I suppose. I suppose it came about because there's an opportunity for funding came up from the HSE National Forum of Family Resource Centres, who are the HSE Post Recovery and Resilience Fund. And that was for different things that might help children develop the resilience and help parents develop additional resilience post-COVID.
All right. Dr. Caroline Burrow, how do we improve resilience in our children without unnecessarily burdening them with the problems of life? Do you know what I mean? Because it comes at you hard and fast, right? Mm-hmm. So I could try my best to think I'm doing the right thing in preparing my children for all sorts of things, but could I be afraid that I might be planting seeds in their mind that they don't really have to contend with?
So resilience is accepting that these things happen in life, that unfortunately we can't avoid difficulties in life. So when we develop our children's resilience, what we're doing is we're preparing them, we're helping them to essentially bounce back from these difficult times that we can't avoid. So resilience itself is made up of a number of different factors. So things like self-awareness, self-confidence, things like emotional regulation, emotional awareness, good support networks. So all of these things make up resilience. So it's about the individual and also about the community, the environment that surrounds them. So when we foster resilience in our children, what we're doing is we're preparing them to cope with all of these difficult
events. Right, so we're not necessarily asking them to confront things that may happen, but we're tooling them up with the ability to cope with the inevitability of them happening. Well, it's not always inevitable, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And this is techniques, is it?
Yeah, so resilience is a combination of behaviours, of skills, of thoughts. And so what we can do is we can give our children opportunities and resources to develop resilience through these skills, through learning. So we often think that either we have resilience or we don't, but that's not actually true. It's a thing that we can develop and learn throughout our lives. And the earlier that we can begin to learn and develop this, the better. Mm. So there's lots of models of resilience. There's lots of psychological models. There's lots of models of resilience in children. And we're focusing on one particular model called the 7 C's of resilience. So we're looking at developing these 7 qualities of resilience. And we're going to try and do that through activities such as play, connection through nature, through parenting skills. through cultivating compassion for ourselves and others, and through embodied movement and body practices. So those are the things that the parents are going to learn on the day in order to help them develop these seven C's of resilience.
Yeah, well, I think parents are going to learn things along the way here, because, you know, we're talking about fostering resilience in young people, but I think there's many of us that have gone through our childhood, our teenage years and into adulthood and still haven't learned those skills yet. And we might misname it as something else. We might just cope. We might just say that's the way life is. But we lack resilience.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, depending on our previous experiences, that we might have not have had the resources and the opportunities to develop some of these things. And the idea behind this particular day is that parents get to develop their own resilience skills. So one of the best ways that we have of teaching children is to model for them. So if we're more resilient as adults, we can model how to respond to life's difficulties. We model resilience, but also we're more capable of actively teaching these skills to our children if we're resilient as well.
Right, and before I go back to Breege, I hope this is not a we're talking about the children, but talking about adults. I hope this is not a controversial question. But when we sort of talk about how people cope with an illness diagnosis or how they cope with bereavement, you know, people go, everyone deals with bereavement differently, right? Is that what's actually happening, or is it actually our different levels of resilience that's dictating how we deal with these things?
So yeah, so coping is part of resilience. So we may have our own coping strategies. Now, some of these coping strategies might be really helpful, and some of these coping strategies might be unhelpful. And these are things that we've developed, that we've learned throughout the years, depending on our own upbringing, depending on the experiences that we've had. Now, some of these things might be helpful and some might be unhelpful. So when we think about resilience, we're looking at developing, amongst other things, helpful coping strategies to manage these difficulties that, as we said, we're not going to avoid during life.
Yeah. Okay. Breege, and obviously there's seen a gap here, and this is being done through the Dunfanaghy Resource Centre. And I think that, you know, life comes at you very fast, particularly for us here in Donegal. And I think it is particularly for us here in Donegal, because we know for a fact the incredibly negative impact both on physical and mental health. The mica crisis is, as it's known, the defective concrete block crisis, children having to live in that environment. We know we've got the lowest level of disposable income, one of the highest levels of poverty. We know we've had to speak to our children about the awful events in Chrysler, where it couldn't be brushed under the carpet. You have to have those conversations and those explanations. So I think even particularly in Donegal, but not uniquely, our very young people have been faced with, you know, some real tough realities of our lives.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm going to go back and forth and correct you that it's not just Dunfanaghy Family Resource Centre that's been involved in organising this. We've actually combined the resources of the three family resource centres, which are Meva Resource Centre and Downstrands as well. We've worked closely with our partner agencies in Donegal, like TUSLA, and with the parent partner, the PPSF, the parent partner support network in Donegal as well, to deliver this. But going back to resilience, so essentially, I suppose resilience is our ability to bounce back from adversity, knowing how to cope in spite of setbacks or barriers or limited resources. So all those things you mentioned, you know, are very much similar. So the ability, I suppose, is super important, you know, right from the beginning of childhood. You know, it's a key component of mental health. So our ability to solve a presented problem as effectively as possible, I suppose. You know, so it's I suppose you can look at some people. You talked about how people deal with it differently. You know, and I suppose the characteristics of somebody who would have low resilience, you know, they would overreact to normal stress, or, you know, they may have a lack of hope. But another person whose cup of resilience is filled, or they've got more bounce in their tire or their balls, so to speak, are much able to adapt. So they have more ability to adapt, of better coping strategies. And that's what it's all about, really.
And the better prepared our children are, Dr. Burrow, the better we are as parents. Because, you know, if you have to drive a car, you have to go through 12 lessons and all this type of stuff to operate heavy machinery. There's courses, you know, the hoops you have to jump through to drive an Arctic. And yet here we are faced with the responsibility or dealing with having the responsibility of bringing a new person into the world and protecting them and doing the best for them. There's no rule book. And if there is a rule book, it'd have to be a different rule book for every bloody one of them. Do you know what I mean? So it's tough, like.
Yeah, of course. And I think the great thing about when we foster resilience in our children, when we try and help them develop it, that we're actually doing that in ourselves as well. So we're reinforcing our own resilience. And so it works both ways. And so the more a family can be resilient, the more that they're able to cope with these difficulties that unfortunately life throws at us. And as Breeze was saying, we know, and as you yourself were saying, we know that all these factors have been affecting our young people's mental health. And so it's really important at this time to kind of boost up resilience in families, because we know that these things are ongoing as well. We've got ongoing financial difficulties, ongoing global crises. These aren't going away. So it's really important.
I don't know when the Cold War was, but anyway, I think it was when they were sending the tablets out, the iodine tablets or whatever. And I was a very young person at that point, but like, I didn't know how to deal with that as a child. Yeah. What that meant, what was next, is mom and dad going to be okay? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't necessarily go to my parents and say, this is how I'm feeling. And even if I did, I'm not sure what they'd have even been able to say to me. But I spent a lot of nights on that issue and other issues, lying in bed, petrified. Yeah. You know, absolutely petrified. And then trying to get up the next day and everything was okay. And there's still elements of that and other things in my childhood that still... You know, you're not quite as well of coping with other things then as an adult, because it's, I don't know, it's a learned behaviour or whatever it might be. But that's, and there's a new set of problems, Breeze, for young people to worry themselves about.
Yeah. And life is not meant to be always good. You know, and I suppose that's the thing. Sometimes when you look at social media, you think life should always be good, but it's not. There's always going to be pitfalls. There's always going to be good and bad.
But on that point, I think children now could be forgiven for thinking that there's no good. And we have to be careful of that too.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because I could see, you know, I could see a lot of good. But, you know, everywhere a child turns, it's like the dangers of social media. Someone's going to pick you up in the street. Don't do that. Don't climb a tree. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in Ukraine. Our houses are falling down around, you know, like, where's the space for a child to breathe and go, well, all right, life's not that bad. Do you want to come in there, Caroline?
I think this is one of the beauties of the model of the seven C's of resilience, because the seven C's actually foster parts of resilience to manage that. So one of the things, for example, is competence. So it's teaching your children that they're capable of making decisions, that they're capable of overcoming life's problems. It's looking at confidence. How do we instill confidence in our children and our young people? It looks at connection. So how do we connect with others around? Because we know that if we have strong connections in peer groups, in family groups, in the community, that this fosters resilience. It also looks at things like contribution. So knowing that we can contribute to the world. So it's really easy for us to feel overwhelmed by everything that's happening in the world at the moment, by wars, by eco-anxiety, all of these things, the climate crisis. But by looking at how we can directly contribute, whether that's in a very small way or in a big way, then that gives us a sense of meaning in our lives. It helps us to manage these difficulties more. Mm. So we also look at coping directly, control. So it's about how do we teach our children that they do have some control. So again, it's easy for us to feel like we have no control. We're being told what to do. You know, we don't have control over what's going to happen. But we can teach our children that we do have some control over some aspects of our lives, and that they can foster their own control and autonomy. But also the acceptance that sometimes we can't control everything. You know, sometimes things are out of our control. So by looking at these seven C's, it's a really good model for looking at how do we then manage everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah, all right, okay, I think I want to go. Because I find it overwhelming too at times, you know. You mentioned the climate, because even everything is it's hard to counteract, right, the climate message that young people are getting to try and motivate them to motivate change, that effectively the world's going to end, right, okay? And that is to motivate them to follow people and to do the right thing. But it's a kind of a strange starting point that, you know, something has to be done or everything's going to end. It's not going to like that. But anyway. All right, Breach. By accident rather than design, people are going to have a greater opportunity to book a slot. April 22nd, you say. Has it been formally postponed from Friday, or are you waiting to see the lie of the land, literally?
No, it has formally been postponed there now from 10 o'clock this morning. I spoke to the hotel and we've cancelled it there and we've rescheduled it for the 25th. Now, we do have a full house. It sold out very,
very
quickly.
Good, okay.
But the 25th may not suit some now. So just after the show now, we'll go back into our emails and we will contact everybody that has booked in and we'll look to see if they want to reschedule. And then we'll know how many places are freed up, I suppose, mm-hmm. for a second booking. Yeah.
Sorry, April 25th, you say it's rescheduled too?
Yes.
Okay, because I said 22nd. Okay, just want to make sure. Right, okay, listen, maybe you might even speak a little bit in more advance to that. It's a free interactive self-care day for parents of children aged 12 and under. It was due to be held on Friday. It's been deferred now to April 22nd as people might have holiday books or whatever it might be. Maybe some people might not be attending and that might free up some tickets. So who did you say where to check for that? Sorry, Breach, pardon my ignorance.
So just after the programme now, we'll go on and we'll look and then we'll be contacting
people and then decide what to do next.
Media. Yeah,
understood.
We will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, Dr. Caroline, in between now and then though, right, a lot of parents are listening to you and going, right, seven C's sounds good because we have to do something because we're seeing record levels of children under pressure through their mental health. So we have to be doing something. So even before April 25th, you know, can you signpost parents if they're interested in hearing more of what you've got to say?
Yeah, so there's great resources in the Donegal Parenting Network. I think Breach will probably have some good local resources that people can contact. So the Family Resource Centres have loads of good resources as well.
And they're not a closed shop. They're open, Breach, to everyone. And that's what they're there for. They're a community resource.
That's correct. Donegal Parent Hub is also a really good space for parents to go for information. But yeah, the resource centres are open to everyone, from cradle to grave, so to speak.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed for your time, Breach. We do appreciate it, and we'll flag that event closer to the time as well. Dr. Caroline Burrow, clinical psychologist at Northern Meadow Therapy. People, presumably, if they're interested in Northern Meadow Therapy, they can Google that and they'll come across it.
Yeah, so I have a website and a Facebook page, and people are welcome to contact me via that.
Thanks for your time. Is there anything that you feel we should add, by the way, just things you...
I think that resilience can often feel like it's a really big thing. Mm. Do you know, it feels like a huge thing to develop, but there's lots of little really simple things that you can do to develop it. So, you know, just getting out in nature is a really helpful way, you know, just looking after your self-care, all of these things.
I think trusting the process as well, because I think sometimes people find it, even when you say seven C's, it might go seven. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it is like that, but... Yeah. Sometimes you just have to trust the process.
And I think what we really want to come across from the day and from this as well is that it doesn't have to be a big thing, that there's opportunities every single day that you have to develop your children's resilience. So just like helping them to learn a new skill develops their resilience, helping them to label an emotion and speak about an emotion develops their resilience. So there's loads of practical ways that you can do it that's free, that's easy, that you can do in your everyday activities. And that's the key to the conference, is that parents are going to come away with these ideas that they can slot into their lives really easily. And I think to remember that you're already doing it.
Yeah.
You know, we've survived so much in the
last
few years.
And there's a lot of positive. The world is a wonderful place. This is a wonderful country with wonderful people. Yeah. And there's lots of greatness out there, right? You know, even when we're struggling, you talked about the outdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, unrivaled friendship, you know, companionship.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots to be happy and positive about.
Yeah, definitely.
We can over-focus.
Those are the things that are really fantastic about Donegal. You know, we have this wonderful access to the outdoors, that we have really strong communities here, and those are things that we know really foster resilience in people. So we're starting from a good point.
What's your favourite thing to do?
I like swimming in the sea.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, lots of cold water therapy. So that's really good for mental health.
And I've spoken.
Do it safely, of course.
But there are lots of organisations and groups that do it now, and I've spoken to a lot of people that say precisely what you've just said, that it's really beneficial to them. Listen, it's been lovely having you on. Again, we're talking about something now in the middle of April or the end of April, rather than on Friday, but that is the weather, what it throws up to us. I'm sure if any spaces become available, Donald Fanahy Resource Centre and the rest of the groups will let people know. But for now, Breech Ward, coordinator of Donald Fanahy Resource Centre, and Dr. Caroline Burrow, clinical psychologist at Northern Meadow Therapy. Thank you. All right, would you like to get your hands on a €100 ShopLK gift card? Well, I'm going to tell you just how to do that. They literally don't trust us, Caroline, anymore. It's written in front of me to say, well, I'm going to tell you just how to do that. But I appreciate the work. I'm not who's responsible for it. I'm not criticising anyone, all right? But they don't trust me anymore. But the real exciting part is that we've joined forces with ShopLK for our Shop Local with ShopLK campaign. All you have to do is take a selfie or a photo outside a business, a ShopLK business, tag Highland Radio and ShopLK on social media, any of them. Use the hashtag ShopLocalShopLK. I'll send your photo to us and we can share it for you. It's simple as that. So if you're not on social media, our winner will be selected at the end of the month. Check out the social media pages for all info. So really, look, there's a €100 voucher in there and it's to share the love, share the businesses. ShopLK vouchers are accepted pretty much everywhere as well. If none of that made sense, go on to our social media and it'll all make sense there. 086 60 25,000. We'll can go to our next guest now. Patricia. Good morning, Patricia.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. Right. What's the situation with you and your family, Patricia, that we're highlighting?
My child, she was referred to the orthodontist, the HSE services, back last March 22. She also was approved for cross-border funding. I took that up and went to get an assessment at cross-border. But due to the extensive needs that she has with orthodontist services, they said they couldn't work with her and said that I needed to stay with the HSE. So intermittently now I've been making contact with the orthodontist services and each time I'm getting a different answer. They have not resumed assessment since pre-COVID. And so my daughter's sitting on a waiting list that's not moving. And she's on an urgent waiting case, so she should be one of the first people when the assessments does resume. But how many other children are sitting there that's urgent cases also? And I suppose I get a different answer each time I ring why they haven't resumed.
Now, this is time sensitive because the teeth are developing all the time. And I can only imagine, I'm not sure how much you, but you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but this is going to be very distressing for mum, but for your daughter too, this is really...
Well, my child, she's sitting with missing two teeth at the minute. And like as a 13-year-old, your appearance is a massive thing for her. Mm. I was just listening to the Fillion talk here before came on. I'm thinking, she does have the bounce ability and she's coping well with it, but I can see that she's stressed and she's having repetitive dreams about her teeth falling out, because that was another thing.
Yeah.
The HSE dentist had told her that one of the repercussions of not getting the work done soon was that she could lose her two front teeth. So she's having these repetitive dreams that she's losing all her teeth. And, that's obviously her stress is coming through in these dreams, and that her... And she is, you can see a bit of a rise in her anxiety levels.
Listen, there's a limit to all of our resilience, no matter how resilient one is. It's going to wear you down. And also, I think for not only the physical work that needs to be done, but I think her well-being and her sleep and everything else that she has to do in life has to be considered as well. So let me just get to the crux of this. There is no cross-border option. So this work has to be done within... the 26 counties through the HSE. So what are you not getting from the HSE that we can make inquiries on your behalf? An assessment, an appointment, the actual work?
They have to do an assessment. They have to do an assessment to find out exactly the work. Like, there was an assessment done in the north, but they just said to extend it, but what she needs done, she's going to need a number of oral surgeries. So they said they couldn't take it on, that it was just too much for them as an orthodontist practice, that it would have to stay within the hospital setting. like I have been, I've been told first on one of my first phone calls was that they just hadn't started because of since COVID. Then I was told they had there was a machine not working. And just yesterday I rang and they said, told me they didn't have the premises to actually do assessments. Mm. Like for me, the HSE obviously has numerous buildings, which they should be, because this is, you know, for, it's an urgent enough situation that.
Yeah, but listen, let's run through the list. Let's run through the list here. COVID, come on now, seriously, that's a smokescreen.
Yeah.
We're not buying that one, are we, Patricia? Secondly, machine not working. For how long? Since when? I mean, that's unacceptable if that's the case
as
well.
That's going on for months now.
Exactly, and no premises as well. The HSE have got an awful lot of property, so I'm not buying that either. Right. I don't know if this would be through a GP or your own dentist. Has any letters been sent pressing the urgency of this, like from a GP talking of not only the importance of from a physical perspective, but the emotional impact?
No, I haven't actually gone down that route, but that would be my next avenue to my GP. Right. I would be looking for the GP to actually intervene.
Yeah.
It was the dentist, the HSE dentist that referred her, and he did send the urgency for the needs that, for her needs that she has, that she would need to get it done. You know, that it's like she's aware that it's going to take a long period of time for her work to be done and to be finalized and for everything to be okay. And she's all right with that, but I think it's getting it started.
All right, okay. The assessment, because you know what? If the first step is taken, maybe any further delays can be more manageable, but the process hasn't even begun yet. This is like waiting for a passport, but the passport application is not even in the post
yet. That's exactly it.
Right,
and
so,
you know, like, I would have no issue travelling to Sligo.
Yeah,
you know,
of course,
if the service is addicted, issue going where the service is. You know, you'd do anything for your child, and that's it.
How long has she been waiting on an assessment now? Now, Patricia, just for clarity in
my mind. She was referred in March 22.
Oh, right. Okay. So we're in a year in now. I think you've shown extreme patience here. And I think you've been pretty fair to the health service saying, right, okay, maybe it's tough to get things back up and running again, but we're in no excuse territory now. She shouldn't still be waiting.
No.
Okay. Right, let us make inquiries on your behalf as much as we can. And we'll start with the basic one. Why is it taking a year for a simple assessment? Surely it's not COVID. How long has this machine been broke, when it's going to be fixed? And what are you on about with no premises? Not you, Patricia. Whoever's been speaking to you, leave that with us, okay?
Yeah.
And hopefully there's some progress, because this, as you say, we can't exhaust this, your beautiful young girl's resilience any further. You know, she needs to be in the process now, so she's got a light at the end of the tunnel to look forward to.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, well, Patricia,
we're with
you on this one, and we wish you nothing but speed in getting this sorted. All right, we'll see what we can do. All right, thank you very much indeed. I mean, can't make any commitments, but who is to say that inquiries might not progress things? That's all we can sort of hope to achieve there. Right, okay. We are going to take a break. It's scheduled now. And we have Kieran waiting in the wings with business news and a preview of the Highland Radio Business Matters podcast. It's live for you now. And it'll be broadcast on Sunday. But I've just been informed, by the way, and I understand that the event on Friday in Dunlow was only cancelled on at 10 o'clock because of the weather. And it's being rescheduled to April 21st, not 25th. But as I say, it's fully sold out at this point, or not sold out, but it's full. And we'll let you know if any places become available as the organisers email people that were due to be there.
Business Matters, in association with ATU Donegal's Faculty of Business. If you're an owner or manager in a food production business, consider the new one-year Level 8 Higher Diploma in Food Business and Product Innovation. It's just one three-hour lecture weekly. Call 918-6600 or email gary.mcgill@atu.ie.
Okay, it is Business Matters time with Kieran O'Donnell, presenter of the podcast. Kieran, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
I see a major problem before we even get started here.
Yes.
But anyway, we'll get to that. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Right, that's all right.
We'll start with some news.
Yeah.
We've stumbled upon the problem immediately.
Yeah.
Is that Lahey?
Yeah.
Now, there is some controversy as whether or not there's an E in Lahey, but there's definitely a G, Kieran.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, carry on with the good news.
You've got the wrong script, Greg.
O'Donnell's Bakery in Lahey has been awarded the prestigious Food Safety Assurance Accreditation. Since joining the Super Value Food Academy, production in O'Donnell's Bakery has doubled, creating 20 new jobs in the process. So overall, Greg, a total of 19 facilities and businesses across Ireland received accreditation under the scheme that is being run by Food Safety Professionals Association.
What a great company, you know, in terms of achievements, but employment as well. It's so many different industries employing so many different people, but it doesn't always, you don't realise it until you hear it read out from you like that, Kieran.
Yeah, and look, I suppose one of only 19, and obviously there's a very strict criteria. It's a real good badge of honour for the business to sort of wear now and obviously promote and maybe increase business.
All right, now, applications are open for the LEO programme.
Yeah, applications have opened for ScaleX, a Donegal Local Enterprise Office Accelerator programme that gets underway in April. Donegal ScaleX will target startup entrepreneurs with the potential for fast growth in a range of sectors. The deadline for applications is Monday, March the 27th. So the plan is for 12 businesses to be selected for the programme. That will commence on April 19th and it runs for 11 weeks. And for more information, check out Donegal Local Enterprise Office.
All right. Okay. Yeah, indeed. And the support's there. We talk about it regularly and people are accessing them all the while. So that's good to see. New car sales on the up here, Kieran?
Yeah, new car registrations for the first 2 months of 2023 in Donegal are up 4% compared to the same period last year, and that is according to the Society of the Irish Motor Industry. So new car sales for January and February of this year were in Donegal were 945. That's an increase of 38 compared to the first 2 months of 2022. And looking at the national picture, Greg, February's new registrations have continued on a similar pattern to January, with a 9.9% increase compared to the same month last year. But I suppose tellingly, a slagging 13% behind pre-COVID February 2019. So it's still trying to get back to pre-COVID sales.
The only thing is, and I wonder, is the fly in the ointment, is that, you know, whilst production lines are improving all the while, I wonder, is it a case of the new cars not being there for delivery that early in the year? But the people are sitting there with the cash in their hands. Do you know what I mean?
I wonder
if that gap could be made up by a shortage of new stock.
Yeah, demand is a problem. I haven't talked to a number of local garages. Demand was a problem up until the end of January.
Supply.
Yep. Demand wasn't a problem. Meeting the demand was the problem. So, again, I've noticed a slight drop, Greg, in the price of second-hand cars in the last couple of months, and I'm wondering, is that due to the fact that the supply is becoming more plentiful now in the new cars?
For sure, yeah. It's all interconnected. There's just no doubt about that. And also, too, I think it's access to UK cars has improved a little bit as well, and all of those things filter into affecting the market, but still, I think that's pretty strong figures for the new car sales.
Yep.
Right, the McCafferty Group, a big organisation now, they're in the Dublin market.
Yeah, they have bought the Barrage, it's a well-known Dublin pub located next to the Grand Canal, and it's reported that the price was €3.75 million. The group is owned by Declan Boyd from Letterman Award, and the company owns a number of bars in the Northwest and the UK.
It's interesting time and purchase there, because commercial property transactions have been falling back a little bit, so maybe they're getting in just at a good time in the market there. Right, National Award for Leanra Letterkenna.
Yeah, Leanra Letterkenna have won first place in the state and business section of Glory na Gael's national competition. Leanra Letterkenna promotes the use of the Irish language, Letterkenny and surrounding areas through family events and social nights. And Leanra was appointed to develop an Irish language plan for Letterkenny as a Gaelic services town, and an award like that has shown that they're doing good work. So well done to Barbara and the team there.
All right, it's a bumper Business Matters this week, and we'll take a quick break, and Kieran's going to stay with us, and we're going to have a run through of a number of guests that are on that podcast. Stay right where you are. We're in the company of Kieran O'Donnell, and we've caught up on some of the news stories from across the region, and now we're going to talk about the podcast, which is available for you to listen to on demand on our website, highlandradio.com. It's also up there on Spotify and iTunes as well. So what's coming up this week, Kieran?
Yeah. On this week's Business Matters, Greg, I'm joined by the founder of 3D Issue, Paul McNulty, entrepreneur and broadcaster, Bobby Kerr, and Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Simon Coveney. Donegal Enterprise Week, Greg, was launched in the Radisson Hotel on Monday in Letterkenny here, and founder and managing director of 3D Issue, Paul McNulty, was one of three local business owners who shared their experiences in a session that was chaired by Bobby Kerr. Paul set up 3D Issue, which specialises in software for the digital publishing market, in 2006 and employs a team of 20. Now, his company is one of the first to introduce a four-day working week, and here he talks about why he took that decision.
So one of the things I wanted to do was introduce something that would make people stay within our organisation. And we looked at the four-day work week, and it's been brilliant, both for retention, but also for employee happiness, you know, and satisfaction in the job, you know. So we have two systems. We have one team doing Monday to Thursday and the other team doing Tuesday to Friday. So everybody has a three-day weekend, you know.
So it was a change in culture is really what you were looking to do.
Yeah, yeah. And you see the team coming in now on... After the weekend, you see that benefit, that extra spring in their step that they got from having that extra day off.
Now, it's an interesting one, this, Kieran, the whole four-day working week, because I think there's kind of different groups of people out there. I think a lot of the employment in this county, a lot of it, not all of it, of course, wouldn't necessarily fit the four-day week model because of maybe it could be in the hospitality industry, it could be in the tourism industry or what have you, and maybe they could adapt to a four-day working week. I don't know, but they struggle already to recruit and retain, but maybe that's part of it. In other businesses, I think, where it's easier sort of to work out the hours and the productivity, the jury's in, and these businesses seem to think it really works. A lot of businesses that adopt it are retaining it.
Yeah, Paul's company was one of the first to embark on this way of working, and actually one of the other business owners that was on the panel, Malachy Eastwood of Gerton Technologies, actually acknowledged the fact that Paul was the person who was sort of the trailblazer in this regard, and a lot of other companies have followed suit since. As he explained, it's two different teams, Monday to Thursday or Tuesday to Friday, so that means that the office is being manned on a weekly basis during those days. So different way of working. Paul's in business 16, 17 years. He's about to embark on two new projects. He talked about the help he got from the local enterprise office when he decided to set up after identifying the niche, and went on to get help in terms of research. And a very interesting fella, and a team of 20, so a good success story.
Yeah, and you talked also to Bobby Kerr, you say?
Yeah, Bobby Kerr, as we know, is a well-known entrepreneur and presenter of News Talks Down to Business, and he chaired that panel discussion, as I mentioned. A native of Kilkenny, he was one of the original Dragons on Dragon's Den that ran from 2008 to 2012, and he is celebrating 40 years in business this year. In this piece, Greg, he speaks about the changes that are happening in the retail sector.
Retail is now going to have to differentiate itself from online. So how do you do that? It has to be an experiential kind of thing. So it has to be, the experience has to be better than pressing a button on your computer and ordering something. So there has to be a reason to go into a shop. And that'll challenge retailers. But I think retailers will rise to the occasion, as they always did. Retail's been changing for the last 100 years, and it's going to keep changing, and retailers will just change with it.
Yeah, and he's been round the block. He knows what's what.
He delivered the keynote address to officially mark the start of Donegal Enterprise Week for 2023. Top 10 tips at the end of his presentation, and the first one was damn the begrudgers, and I did ask him, was that the most important one? And he said it was.
And a lot of that's touched on, and we've talked about it over the years, however long you've been doing this now, it feels like a long time, in a good way. It is, you know, maybe that's a different way of phrasing it, but it is, you know, don't be held back, take the chance, and sometimes it's those around us who probably are caring for us that are saying, don't risk it, don't do that. Don't.
Well,
I'm not saying they're begrudgers, but maybe they live in the same sort of...
Well, just on that, he made reference to the importance of family, health and friends. And I suppose he may be looking at it through retrospective view, but a man who's been in the business for 40 years, and as you say, he's experienced the good, the bad and the ugly, and he did say that. The other thing he mentioned was the importance of having something outside the business to keep the mind right, and I suppose the importance of staying fit mentally and physically, and in his opinion, if you're able to do that, you would function much better as a business owner, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, let's talk here now from the Minister for Enterprise.
Yeah, last Friday, the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Simon Coveney, delivered the keynote speech at the Building Better Business event at Donegal ATU's campus in Letterkenny. It was the first of nine regional conferences being rolled out by his department, and that the aim was to highlight the opportunities presented by digital transformation and decarbonisation. Here, he talks about the potential for renewable energy to be built off the Donegal coastline.
Sometimes people talk about Donegal about having it, you know, being disadvantaged because it's a, you know, it's a long way away from Dublin and the road infrastructure isn't what it should be and so on. But there are some big advantages too. One of them is the potential for offshore wind off Donegal, and of course the engineering know-how and capacity that you already have in ports like Killybegs and Greencastle and so on, that may help Donegal to really take that opportunity and grasp it. And, you know, in 5 and 10 years' time, we may well see, you know, significant amount of renewable energy being built off the Donegal coastline.
We will, but we want to see the benefit of it here as well. And we know the KFO, the Killybegs Fishermen's Organisation, are involved in projects to that end. But we also know there's a great deal of concern from sort of the inshore fishers as to what impact it might have on them and their fishing grounds. Everyone needs to be brought along for the ride if we're going down this road, Kieran. Nothing can be imposed on people. I think everyone, if there are information gaps and those vacuums are filled by concerns and fears, well, then you need to engage with those peoples because this is going to move very, very quickly and they need to be doing that work now.
Yeah, you're 100%, Greg. And I suppose events like Friday are aimed at exactly doing that. It took us time to talk to the business owners and to the peoples from the different agencies. I suppose it was a fact-finding mission. It's one of nine. The aim is to get out into the regions, and they made a point of starting and having the first in Donegal and having the last in Dublin, as opposed to maybe that being the reverse, maybe in years gone by for similar things. But I'm sure once the process is finished, people like the minister will be much the wiser in terms of maybe what the needs are for businesses, because what he did talk about in his keynote address as well was when they're drawing up a framework for legislation, they need to know what the employers and businesses need so that they can accommodate those needs when they're putting legislation together.
All right, the full interviews with Paul McNulty, Bobby Kerr and Simon Coveney are available to listen to now on our website, highlandradio.com, or on YouTube, on Spotify, or in fact on, what's the other one, iTunes. And if people want to listen to it on air, Kieran?
Yeah, after the 6 o'clock news, Greg, on Sunday evening.
Right, okay. And if you'd like to get in touch with the programme, what's the story there?
Drop an email, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
All right, Kieran, listen, thank you very much indeed. That is Kieran O'Donnell, the Business Matters podcast, available for you right now. Right, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. Earlier on, we were talking about, someone asked about how, you know, the our legislators, the TD senators, how many of them are landowners or landlords? Now, there's someone put some figures together quite recently, so I'll run through them so we get a sense of what the story is. Almost 80 TDs and senators are either landlords or landowners, with some politicians holding substantial property portfolios. 48 TDs own rental properties or land. 48 TDs. That's a significant chunk of TDs that are elected into the Dáil, isn't it? 29 senators also have property and land interests. So 48 of your TDs have rental properties. The biggest landlord in the Dáil is Michael Healy-Ray. He disclosed he's got 18 properties for letting, as well as more than 100 acres of farmland. Sinn Féin TD Johnny Girk declared rental income from properties in Oldcastle in Meathum in Galway, Edgeworthstown in Longford. So it's not just one political party. The Greens, Brian Ledden, he's a landlord with a rental on the North Circular Road in Limerick. Former Labour leader Alan Kelly, he declared a holiday home that is sometimes let in County Kerry. Wexford Fine Gael TD Paul Keogh declared his occupations as a landlord, listed three properties, including two apartments in Enniscorthy and Haddington Road in Dublin. Sean Canny, he's an independent. He's listed several lettings, including three apartments in St. Giles Place, Galway, as well as three other properties in Galway. Alan Dillion, he's a Fine Gaeler, declared a letting in Castle Bar. Fianna Fáil, Sean Haughey, he's got a rental income from properties in Kinsale and Portmarnock in Dublin.
Sinn Féin's Rory O'Murchagh, he has declared the use of a rent-a-room scheme, while Fianna Fáil TD for Cavan Monaghan, Brendan Smith, he's got an apartment in Dublin, which is understood to be in the city centre. Charlie McConnellogue declared rental income from an apartment in Ashtown. It's understood this apartment is in the Chandler building in the North Dublin suburb. And skip through some more here. Thomas Byrne, he's a Fianna Fáil minister. He's got a rental property in Rosnaula. Kieran Cannon owns a holiday home in France. And let's see, where else are we? What else have we got? Stephen Donnelly, he's letting two properties, one in Sandyford and Kent, and one in Offaly. So, you know, in terms of percentage, that's two ministers deciding this, that are landlords, in Charlie McConnellogue and Stephen Donnelly. I'm not saying they're the only two, but the cabinet's not huge either. And then we can go on to the Senate. Fianna Fáil Senator Robbie Gallagher, he's a landlord with properties in Monaghan and Donegal. He likes the border counties. So that's it. And I mean, I don't like. How many of you out there know someone who's a landlord? If you know 100 people, are half of them landlords or a third of them landlords? I don't know any landlords. But if you're a TD, you know a lot of landlords, and they're TDs and they're making the decisions. They are the ones that are saying, do you know what? We need to be fair to the landlords. We really do, because what's happening at the moment isn't fair to them. Well, there you go. Listen, people can make up their own minds. I'm not drawing any conclusions from that. I'm just stating the facts as they are. Because someone asked and I said I'd get that. And we're working on other things that people ask as well. Okay, listen, thank you so much for watching, listening and engaging with the programme in any which way you did. It's greatly appreciated and we thank you. More people now than ever did before listening to the programme, which is great. We'll continue to try and do as best we can for you in terms of, you know, chasing up issues and keeping you updated with what's going on. We're going to start again tomorrow morning at 9. From me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, and Anya, who also worked on the programme, of course. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, as I say, at 9.